Hi everyone, and thanks for tuning into UBS Global Research Pod Hub, a channel that shares insights from economists, strategists, and equity analysts on the pivotal questions and events shaping today's markets. I am Sunil Tirumalai, Head of Emerging Markets and Asia Equity Strategy, and I'm here with Lei Meng, China Equity Strategist. In this episode, we are going to take a high-level look at China's A-share market. Lei, for someone new to the China markets, I think it'll be good to start with what the A-share and the H-share markets are, why are there two different markets, and what role do they play in the overall Chinese economy and capital markets?
Thanks, Sunil. You know, China had two markets. The A-share Chinese onshore equity market was established in the 1990s to serve the financing needs of large-scale state-owned enterprises, which are SOEs. Initially, the market was very small and there was a quota system for A-shares. Each province, local government, local company was allocated a quota for the financing needs. And since 2010, the A-share took a new role on providing financing to startups and non-SOE, the private companies, the private sector, to boost the economy. An annual capital raise through IPOs and number of firms listed on A-shares has been consistently being the top in the world ranking. But for the H-share market, the Hong Kong market is generally established for global investors to support the financing needs for VIE structure and attractive the global inflows into China. Now, actually, the China onshore, the A-share market is much bigger than Hong Kong. In terms of market cap, China A-share has $16 trillion as of the last year. This is the second largest equity market in the world, just after the United States. And for 2025, the daily average trading turnover amounted to $215 billion. Again, it's the world's largest, one of the largest, second largest market, just after the US. And for Hong Kong, for H-share, the total market value, the market cap was about 6.3 trillion at the end of last year. And the daily turnover for the last year is just $33 billion, which is just like one tenth of the China onshore market.
Great. That was a good introductory overview. But digging deeper, what could be the difference between A and H markets? If you could talk about sectoral mix or ownership, where do foreigners participate more, etc., that would be helpful.
Yeah, sure. So H-share market is much more well covered and discussed by global investors because many of these companies, China Internet, well-known names in the global market, and in MSCI indices, they have much higher weighting. So that's the reason why global investors are more familiar with the Hong Kong equity market rather than the onshore Asian market. And actually, the major differences between China A and China H are in sector allocation and investor mix. And firstly, on sector allocations, the Asian market is much skewed to financials and industrial because initially the market was established for the financing needs for SOE, state-owned enterprises, and industrial company, financial companies are SOEs. But for Hong Kong, for H-share, so many internet companies with VIE structure, with global investor access, just went to public in Hong Kong. And so that's the reason why H-share is much more skewed to communication services, consumer discretionary, and IT sectors. And secondly, on investor mix, as we just highlight, H-share market is dominated by the global investors. Based on our calculation, foreign investors generally hold about 40-50% of free flow market cap. For China A-shares, it just opened through Shanghai, Hong Kong, Shenzhen, Hong Kong Stock Connect in the past decade. So right now, the A-share investors is mostly dominated by the local investors. Global investors hold like less than 8% of the free float, which is much lower than Hong Kong. Retail investors hold about one third of the free float market cap, and they contribute to around half of the daily turnover. So that means A-share market is not so institutionalized. And for institutional investors, A-share investors, including mutual funds, insurance, money, hedge funds, and each of them hold around 5 to 8% of the market cap. In terms of the share price performance, the China A-share and H-share often trade at very different prices. On a weighted average basis, there is a 20% valuation premium for the same company, for A share versus H share, the smaller companies even have larger premiums. We believe there are a lot of reasons to explain this gap. Number one is about liquidity premium. As we just highlight, individuals, small institutional investors are more dominating the Asian market. They favor small caps rather than large caps. And number two, investors onshore generally prefer the mainland style, news flow driven trade. They trade more frequently, they prefer growth to value. So that's the reason why Asia is more offering a premium in terms of valuation. And number three, H-share global investors are more sensitive to macro data. And last but not least, there's a cost of capital differences between onshore and offshore. The onshore right now, the borrowing rate is much lower than in Hong Kong.
Understood. That is very helpful. Now, I think looking into the performance of the A-share market itself, I know that it's been a challenging period for a decade or so, but what is changing? Is there reason to get interested or excited? Are the regulators and government looking at the market in a different way right now?
Actually, there's a general consensus in the market. Stock markets up and down should more or less reflect overall economic performance, but actually this is not the case with China. The long-term trend of China Asian market since 2010 has been undershooting China's rapid economic growth. By our estimation, China's GDP has been up by over 240% in 2010 to 2025. However, the China A-share market benchmark index, CSI 300, is just rose by about 30%. This is in sharp contrast with 500% for US S&P 500, and over 130% for Eurostock 600. So that means China Asian market has not fully reflect the economic growth. Actually, there are three reasons behind underperformance of Asia's. Number one, as I just mentioned, Asian market was used to be financing oriented. There's no intention to support investor return because initially it was established to support financing needs for SOE. After that, after 2010, it's established to support financing needs for non-SOE, for the private sectors. And number two, SOE is made a large proportion of the Asia. Sometimes it's over 40, even 50% in the history. That's the reason why overall valuation has been depressed because of SOE discrimination or SOE discount. And number three, the stocks and funds is representing a very small portion of the household wealth. Chinese people more like to save their money in the banks rather than put the money into the equity markets. So this is justified by very elevated Asia risk premium to distress the valuation and market performance. But in the past 3 years, for now, the Asia markets offering higher strategic importance. This is guided by the China's Political Bureau meeting. We think the stock market may slowly replace the property market. You know, the China property market is trending down in the past 3-5 years. So the stock market going to replace property market become the most important wealth reservoir in the next decade. So a slow bull market is needed for China to support common prosperity, to boost the confidence in the private sector, and to support SOE reform, and that will finally translate into the pension to support all Chinese people. To formulate such a slow bull market, there are a lot of reform on the way. Currently, the reform are focused on investor return, like increasing dividends, increasing buybacks, improving information disclosure, and actually the government is deepening SOE reform to help it drive a re-rating evaluation. Also, the liquidity for the Asian market has been improved by continuing IPO and major shareholder reduction. So right now it's no longer financing oriented. It's a transformation from financing oriented to a balance between investor return and the financing needs for the companies. Regulators also make huge efforts to attract the long-term funds inflows to get more money inflow from global investor and insurance money. For example, according to the regulations, 30% of the new premium income should be allocated into the A-share market. And if the, in the extreme case downside scenario, the national team refers to state fund, national team stabilize the market if the market falls sharply in the US-China trade tensions last year and in the market decline in 2024. So it's providing very strong downside support for investors. Actually, the confidence right now has been rebuilt to support such a slow bull thesis. And with such a positive feedback loop, more household savings could continue to be reallocated into the equity market.
Very interesting. I think just for some of the listeners who may not be very familiar, SOE is basically a state-owned enterprise. I think the next topic that I would like to bring up is something that you did touch upon earlier, which is household savings and retail flows. I mean, that's been an important driver of markets, especially in markets like the US, where it is a domestic retail money that has played a big role in the direction of the market, which kind of sectors do well and so on. In the context of China, how far or how mature is that? I do understand there is a fair bunch of bank deposits coming up for maturity this year. You know, would that flow into stocks? How would you think about the whole dynamics around that?
According to UBS China financial team's estimates, China's banking industry could have savings of $8 to $9 trillion due within 2026. This is a very large number. And actually, this is echoed by a significant rise in the amount of precautionary savings over the past few years after COVID. Chinese people like to save, but actually Chinese people save more after COVID. As of now, we do have seen some early signals of households turning into the A-share equity market. From macro perspective, the M1 minus M2, this gap has been rising recently. The ratio of Chinese household deposit to the market cap has been falling. So that means a lot of money is flowing into the equity market from household savings. And from a trading perspective, indicator like turnover, balance of margin financing, number of new investors, trading account, all these indicators begin to improve notably since the second half of last year. We also note in the market upward trend in the past half year, many of the inflows also came from ultra high net worth individuals. This is evidenced by a strong pickup in hedge fund issuance, especially the quantitative products, market neutral, and the index enhancement related products. But this is more like a story. The reallocation of household savings is happening very gradually. If you look at bond markets, money market funds, their balance has seen no redemption so far. The issuance of mutual fund is just recovering very mildly. So only high net worth individuals are buying equity aggressively because the wealth is fat, but ordinary residents, the Chinese people, are not super optimistic about markets so far. Our channel checks with local commercial banks managers also suggest many bank loans have already been renewed, even though the interest rate is very low. So going forward, with the Asia market increasingly recognized by household wealth as a new reservoir after the property market, the savings could gradually flow into the market in like direct channel, ETF, mutual funds. Of course, some investors may choose indirect channel, for example, insurance products, wealth management products, fixed income products, but it's just a very long-term process. Just is echoed with a slow bull market for the next decade, not happening overnight.
Understood. Thank you for that, Ali. And to our listeners, thank you for visiting the UBS Research Pod Hub. That was an overview of China's A-share market with me, Sunil Tirumalai, and Lei Meng at UBS. If you enjoyed this episode, please tune in again and also share this episode with a friend or a colleague.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG, its subsidiaries and or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation, nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax, and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content and has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory, or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction, where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. Copyright UBS 2026. The key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.